This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, we'll speak with Marlena Borsch with Mercantile Consulting Venture, and she was one of the people who took part in CropSphere earlier this week. She provided the lentil outlook. Hog prices are expected to improve this year following a dismal 2020. We'll hear from Kevin Greer, who is a meat and grocery market analyst based in Guelph, Ontario. As you may have heard yesterday, two resolutions were passed at multiple Crop Development Commission annual meetings this week. We'll talk to Brett Halstead from Nokomis about the online meeting that the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission held. And grain prices have taken a major jump this week. We'll have our weekly interview with PI Financial Commodity Futures Advisor Adam Piccolo. All that and more coming up on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, it seems like the wind has finally blown itself out for the most part, and looks like our temperatures will remain steady for the next little while.
Yeah, you know, we were anticipating a gradual decline of the winds, and boy, it took its time. We were upwards of 60 for a little while last evening, then the gusts were down through the 40s in the evening, and then they've come down through the 30s in the later nighttime, and now over the last couple of hours, mainly since sunrise, they've really come down. We're going to be in the 10 to 20 range for most of the afternoon, could even drop below that for a while through the evening and early nighttime. So we're getting rid of that problem. The cloud cover, that's going to be a little more difficult to get rid of. It'll be gradually clearing out once we get past, I think, the daytime. So not too much sun today, calling it mostly cloudy. Temperature has been fairly steady. We started dropping yesterday. We've been slowly falling since then, but just like the winds were very gradual coming down, the temperature took, let me see here, we hit our high of 2 yesterday at 1 o'clock, and we've taken from there to this morning at 10 o'clock to reach minus 8. And that was that's almost 24 hours to drop 6 degrees. But that's what it was, a very slow transition out of that warmest pattern. Now we're still in a warm pattern. We're still above average. Normal high this time of year, minus 13. We're going to hold steady right around minus 7, minus 8 through the afternoon. Without much wind, though, not much wind chill. Tonight, partly cloudy, dropping to minus 11 in the evening, and then coming back up, minus 7 toward morning, minus 3 during the day. We will get some sunshine through tomorrow, mostly sunny sky. Wind will pick back up for a little while, though, west to northwest, 15 to 30. Cloud cover back in Saturday night into Sunday. A little sun early Sunday. Overall, mostly cloudy. We'll drop to minus 7. And trying to keep track of which way the temperature is going, because it's not up during the day and down during the night. It's wherever it feels like being on any given day. Sunday, it's back down. We'll fall to minus 10 through the afternoon. Monday, the first shot of cool air comes in. And I call it the first shot because it's sort of a teaser shot. Minus 9 with a couple of snow showers and flurries Monday. The cold air retreats. We get back to minus 2 on Tuesday, but again, late day, a few snow showers and flurries. The longer-lasting shot of cold air, basically a transition out of this normal pattern, will go from above normal to below normal by the end of next week.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at minus 16 degrees, Swan River minus 11, Dauphin and Roblin, minus 7. Brandon and Shoal Lake Russell, minus 6. Regina, Broadview, Mooseman, and Indian Head are at minus 9. Saskatoon, minus 12. Hudson Bay, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 10. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, a west-northwest wind at 13 kilometers an hour. 93% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 8 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 13 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of plus 1 degree and dropped to a low of minus 5 degrees. There was 0.4 millimeters of water equivalent precipitation that fell in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is minus 13. The normal low is minus 24. The sun rose in Yorkton at 8:48 this morning, and it will set at 5:11 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Portage La Prairie at plus 5 degrees, the cold spot to Dooley Lake at minus 22 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Maple Creek at plus 1 degree, the cold spot was Key Lake at minus 25 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 30 seconds' time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. It's now 12:22. A very strong start to lentil exports in the 2020-2021 crop year has begun to fade in the winter months. Even so, Canadian lentil exports were 52% ahead of last year's pace at more than 1 million metric tons to the end of November. Marlena Borsch with Mercantile Consulting Venture provided the lentil outlook at CropSphere this week. She's projecting 2.6 million metric tons of exports in the current crop year, but adds forecasts are difficult for lentils.
The swings are indeed quite radical, and some of them are induced by some policy decisions in the buying country. So I would say that post-WTO environment, world trade environment, has become difficult, and that political decisions are becoming more prevalent, which have nothing to do with the market itself directly.
India reduced lentil tariffs during short periods last year, and that encouraged some unexpected sales. However, that may not be the case in the upcoming year.
Their lentil seeded area in the rabi crop has increased by about 4%, and they project 1.6 million tons compared to 1.2 million tons last year. That would indicate that their imports are actually going to slow. And also looking at some of the political events, some of the farmer unrest against some of the marketing changes they're implementing in India does not look to me like a political climate that would make imports easier of lentils or would change some of their import regimen that they have at the moment. So I could actually say that even though I have a smaller number than last year, that number could still be somewhat overestimated.
Four countries, India, Turkey, Bangladesh, and the United Arab Emirates, account for nearly two-thirds of Canadian lentil exports. Borsch also has the 2020 breakdown for red and green lentils, starting with the reds.
Red lentil production has increased this year fairly substantially when we look at both Canada and Australia. There were also some small increases in Turkey and potentially in India. But still, an 11% stock use ratio is definitely not terrible. But looking at prices, the one question you might want to ask yourself as well, seeing that we have seen fairly high price levels, what would drive red lentil prices up? And I would say unless we do see some changes in India, we might have seen the highs on the red lentils earlier and will kind of coast for the remainder of the year.
And here is the recap for old crop green lentils.
A lot of buyers are covered into March, April, partly because also there was some pressure on prices with a stronger Canadian dollar and higher container freight. As I mentioned earlier, we are seeing some activity from North Africa. So, all combined, I would say that price movement should be mostly sideways on the current crop, ongoing crop, green lentil side. We will have to maintain decent prices to attract enough acres for the 2021 seeding season vis-a-vis strengthening canola and wheat values.
Looking ahead to the 2021 crop, Borsch runs through some of the contract prices currently being offered.
You've seen 28 cents for large grain lentils for Sapdorn of these, with 24 cents for number twos, 26 cents for greens, and 25 cents for red lentils. And I must say, I was actually pleasantly surprised at the 25 red lentil level. I know there were some 23 cent levels out earlier. These are actually quite decent prices, but I would actually wait with booking them to see how we are doing the jockeying for acres. So the question that I have, are these enough compared to canola and wheat, now that we have received another shot on the arm with the USDA report?
And these were Borsch's concluding thoughts for the new crop year.
It's not very often that we see a whole range of commodities cover full costs and a nice, potentially a nice return. Obviously, will depend on your yield capabilities and so on. And I can say that green lentils, canola certainly looks very good given the yield assumptions. So as we alluded to earlier, some of these prices right now are still very much variable. We will have to look out for canola, though I do think from a rotation point of view, you know, there might be some restrictions. And we will have to look out for wheat, because wheat, I think wheat values have more potential going into the spring to move yet.
Marlena Borsch provided the lentil outlook during CropSphere on Tuesday. It's now coming up on 12:28 on GX in Agriculture. And it's time for the Ag Review portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, Ag Review.
Yorkton-based Harvest Meats is recalling a brand of Polish sausages due to undercooking that may make them unsafe to eat. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency says the recall affects customers in Alberta, British Columbia, Manitoba, Northwest Territories, Ontario, and Saskatchewan. It covers Harvest brand Polish sausages in 675-gram packages with a March 15th best before date. Customers are advised to throw away or return the product. The agency says no illnesses have been reported. A food safety investigation is ongoing. Strong winds gusting to 126 kilometers an hour or more in rural Saskatchewan Wednesday night and Thursday morning caused significant damage. Pictures posted online of the grain elevator at Pence, west of Regina, showed a tall metal annex had been blown over completely. A second metal annex was damaged, showing major dents. There was also a report of a train derailed near Parkbeg, west of Moose Jaw, on the CP Rail main line. Continuing to seek out free trade deals in the Asia-Pacific region, Canada has launched public consultations on the merits of a potential bilateral pact with Indonesia. Such a pact would benefit importers and exporters by improving market access to the world's fourth most populous country, according to Global Affairs Canada. Trade deals between Canada and some nations in the region are already in place, such as the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership between Canada and 10 other countries, Australia, Brunei, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. Indonesia's developing economy has advanced significantly in the last decade, but is believed to still have growth potential led by a growing middle class. Among countries in Southeast Asia, Indonesia already boasts the largest economy. It is also the highest and largest export market in the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, a bloc of 10 member states, including the Philippines and Thailand. CPTPP members Brunei, Singapore, and Vietnam also belong to that organization. Canada and Indonesia are signees on a handful of general World Trade Organization agreements, but currently have no bilateral trade pact. The two signed a Memorandum of Understanding on Trade last August. Farmers should get European Union funding to reduce methane emissions from livestock or increase organic farmland under plans to make agriculture greener in that continent. The EU is nearing the end of a two-year battle to overhaul its massive farming subsidy scheme to attempt to align the agriculture sector, which contributes roughly 10% of EU greenhouse gas emissions, with the bloc's target to have net zero emissions by 2050. The farming policy will suck up 387 billion euros from the EU's next budget for 2021 through 2027, with agriculture spending split between direct payments to farmers and other support for rural development. EU negotiators are wrangling over whether to spend 20 or 30% of payments for farmers on programs to protect the environment. The Commission yesterday outlined what those so-called eco-schemes could include: organic farming, use of feed additives to reduce the amount of methane, a potent greenhouse gas, belched out by animals, and carbon farming, where farmers restore wetlands or peatlands to suck CO2 out of the atmosphere, are among its suggestions. China is set to approve the safety of another genetically modified corn variety and a GMO soybean, both produced by Beijing Debinong Technology Group Company. The move comes after China last year approved three domestically designed GMO crops as safe, the first in a decade, in a fresh push toward commercial planting of GMO crops in the world's top soybean importer and a major corn buyer. Beijing has never permitted planting of GMO soybean or corn varieties, but it permits their import for use in animal feed. The government has said recently, however, that it wants to support biotech breeding to boost food security, leading the industry to expect progress toward commercialization in the coming year. The Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Affairs has opened its plan for safety approval for public comment until February 1st. One of the new products, a glufosate and glufosinate-resistant soybean, known as DBN9004, has already been approved as safe in Argentina, where Debinong is also seeking commercial production. The other, known as DBN9501, is a corn resistant to the fall armyworm pest, which last year reached China's Corn Belt region. Though several further steps must be taken before farmers in China are allowed to plant the crops, the approval is seen as timely given a growing corn deficit in the world's top grain grower. The ministry also said this week it had approved two new GMO corn varieties for import, the glyphosate and insect-resistant MON87411 sold by Bayer's Crop Science Unit and MZIR098 produced by Syngenta. The two corn varieties have been approved in Canada since 2015 and 2016, respectively. And that is a look at the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return right after this. Welcome back to GX and Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's cloudy and minus 8 in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. Hog prices are expected to improve this year following a dismal 2020. Kevin Greer is a meat and grocery market analyst based in Guelph, Ontario. He provided the pork outlook during a Glacier Market Farms online event yesterday. His 2021 forecast is targeting $70 US per hundredweight compared to $60 last year.
Let's be honest, that's not a very exciting price. But it's given how low prices went in 2020, the fact that I'm getting up about 15% isn't that exciting. But again, there's a lot of production there. So again, based on my slaughter forecast and my estimations on demand, I'm suggesting that in 2021, we're going to have an average price U.S. lean of about 70.
The first and fourth quarters will be the weakest, with values in the mid-70s during the second and third quarters.
I am much more bearish than the futures are. So the futures traders see less slaughter than I do, but these are my forecasts, okay? And again, as of now, I am more bearish than the futures.
While packers had some processing costs and challenges last spring due to COVID-19, overall margins were pretty good.
Basically, the year started off with fairly average gross margins. they skyrocketed though when the pork was short and they were selling into a market that needed pork that wasn't being supplied because of the plant shutdowns. And then for the rest of the year, really, they had a lot of leverage in the market. So prices were firm for them, and the low hog prices meant that very, very strong gross margins for most of the year, at least into that November period.
Greer notes there was an increase in hog slaughter numbers in Western Canada last year.
Part of that was because we had an extra week in 2020, but even accounting for that, there was at least 5-6% probably more increase in slaughter on the prairies. And so these packers may be looking to expand. These packers may be looking to grow. These packers may be looking to have even better margins, because the more hogs to the plant, the better the returns are. So again, there's big increase in slaughter at Red Deer, big increase in slaughter at High Life. Positive things are going on with regard to that end of the business.
And Greer was asked to speculate why pork consumption has remained at good levels.
I think that, number one, the importance of protein in a diet has become much more widely known and believed. I think there's now recognized a disconnect between animal fats and heart health. In other words, it's not a negative, or at least not the slam dunk negative that was always thought for the last 40 years. So again, the benefits of protein and the recognition that a good source of protein is animal protein. So those are two anyway. The converse, that maybe loading up on carbs is not the great thing that we thought it was. But again, those are just my views from reading the media. So again, I wouldn't say that my views on this are any more insightful than anybody else's.
Kevin Greer is a meat and grocery market analyst based in Guelph, Ontario. He provided the pork outlook during a Glacier Market Farms online event yesterday. It's now 12:39 on GX on Agriculture.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for February are trading at 112.65. That's up 57. April live cattle trading at 118.07, up 85. March feeder cattle trading at 135.92, up 255. April feeder cattle trading at 138.40, up 240. February lean hogs trading at 68.02, up 172. April lean hogs trading at 72.77, up 70. And that's the livestock market conditions. As you may have heard yesterday, two resolutions were passed at multiple Crop Development Commission annual meetings this week. One covered carbon pricing and recognition of the amount of CO2 sequestered in the soil with modern farming practices. The second resolution calls for the establishment of an export sales reporting program. The chair of the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission, Brett Halstead of Nokomis, says the online meeting was successful.
Yeah, on Tuesday, all the crop commissions had their annual meetings. They were taped and simulcast across the internet or on phone to those members and ag industry participants that were willing to listen in and participate. They went pretty good. The day started and had market presentations on canola and wheat and some other market presentations later in the day. But the AGM, you know, considering it was online, and I think from what I've heard, it went pretty good, and we had a pretty good number of people participating. Don't know exactly how many, but I know it was north of 200.
For an internet event, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, no, and we had some resolutions come out of it, which was good to get some discussion going, and good positive resolutions that encourage Sask Wheat to work with other commissions on reporting of export sales and getting farmers more information to hopefully help them make better marketing decisions, and rewarding farmers for the work they're doing in sequestering carbon and the good work they're putting into, you know, the climate change discussion.
Ottawa says they're going to increase the federal carbon tax to $170 a metric ton by 2030. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it makes us, gets us into an awful uncompetitive situation. There's no way a farmer can pass that cost on. Yeah, what we're doing direct seeding and with modern agriculture, it's actually helping that situation. So it's true, farmers don't pay for the fuel they use on farm. They don't pay the carbon tax on that. That part's exempt. But everything that we bring in or take out of our farm, from the fertilizer that comes or the farm chemicals that come to the dealership to the railway hauling our grain to the West Coast, it's all got a carbon tax on it. And there's no way that we can recoup any of that. So that the belief is, and the thought is, and we tend to agree with this, is that farmers need rewarded for what they're doing to help in the greenhouse gas situation. And that is the direct seeding and the modern agriculture that we're doing, and the reduction in fuel as compared to what we used to use years ago.
Did you hear from any producers about what their intentions are for spring seeding?
The only thing I could say again is I feel, just think with wheat not taking the same market jump that canola, oats, barley, and pulses have, that we could be down a little bit, and it's more so lost acres to oats and barley, pulses or canola.
But wheat prices have jumped in recent days.
It hasn't taken off like barley has. Barley's gone from $4 to $6. Wheat's kind of gone from like $6.50 to $7.50. So percentage wise, it's much slower, you know, unless there's a real rally soon.
Brett Halstead farms at Nokomis and is chair of the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission. It's coming up on 12:44 on GX and Agriculture, and we'll return right after this.
Expect the best.
Welcome back to GX and Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. And grain prices have taken a major jump this week. Commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina, Adam Piccolo, says canola is up $19 a metric ton, and spring wheat has jumped 29 cents a bushel since Monday.
Starting off on the canola front, canola actually is positive by about $19 a ton here this week, even with actually today canola moving down about $5 here right now mid-morning. On the wheat front, kind of like we spoke about last week, that it seemed like the trend was starting to change more positive, and it seemed that that is the case here. Minneapolis wheat positive on the week so far by about 29 cents a bushel. Today we're down about 3 cents. I would say wheat markets are holding in fairly steady here, with beans down 12 and corn down 3. Canadian dollar, a decent move here as well today too, down about 0.75 cents here today, with the U.S. dollar kind of spiking.
What was pushing up canola and wheat prices so much this week?
That is quite a jump. There was a positive USDA report that came out this week, and it, on a few different numbers, came out actually a little bit better than expected. Kind of starting off on kind of the soy side of the markets, that was less as well. Same with the corn. And then winter wheat, the plantings were actually a little bit more than expected, but there were some kind of reduced ending numbers as well too. So kind of positive on the wheat front. But one thing I am kind of watching here is the soy markets quite closely, because it does seem that, you know, we could be out of a bit of a short-term top here. Palm oil futures actually fell nearly 11% this week, with some decent kind of shorter-term kind of rains, which might be getting kind of traders a little bit kind of nervous here. Again, longer-term trends are still up on corn and beans, but the market looks a little vulnerable to kind of short-term technical corrections on the soy side. And again, that would most likely spill over onto the canola side somewhat possibly.
So what's the outlook for next week and beyond?
Well, next week, one thing I'm going to definitely be watching on the wheat front is the combination of, you know, very high export taxes from Russia, stronger than expected demand from China, and, you know, much kind of colder weather heading into the U.S. plains for the second half of this month are all factors contributing to this surge kind of in wheat contracts here this week. And that's, you know, definitely a trend to watch. You know, I believe that it could keep continuing, but I definitely want to keep a close eye on that because, you know, any one of those factors can change on a daily basis. So again, next week, looking for trends to be still remaining positive on wheat. And then for canola, again, watching kind of how the soy markets affect things here, because I believe, you know, producers are starting to look at these prices and consider, you know, protecting for next year's crop. Right now, you can protect kind of at the market on the November futures for, you know, about 40 cents a bushel, depending on kind of the levels that you buy puts at for option strategies. So I think that's garnering a little bit more attention here.
Adam Piccolo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina. It's now 12:48 on GX on Agriculture.
Commodities update.
Canola futures are trading down for the most part this afternoon. March canola trading at $6.86.10, down $1.60. May canola trading at $6.68 even. That's down $4.30. March Minneapolis wheat trading at $6.41.5, up 1 cent. March Kansas City wheat trading at $6.40.25, up 3.75 cents. March Chicago wheat trading at $6.72 per bushel, up 2 cents. March corn trading at $5.32.25, down 2 cents. March soybeans trading at $14.15.25, down 15.25 cents. March oats trading at $3.66.5, down 1.25 cents. And that's the commodities update.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
We're back on GX on Agriculture, and the technical services manager with Hypor Hendrix Genetics suggests the effective management in the farrowing room can help increase the survival of piglets and improve overall profitability. Saskatchewan Pork Industry Symposium 2020, hosted by Sask Pork, was held virtually in November and December. Among the topics discussed was practical farrowing management for better results. Carlos Martins tells us at what stage sows farrow.
First, it's important to understand that the natural gestation length is slightly increasing, depending on several factors. And we must allow it if we want to have a good piglets at birth, less stillborn, and optimal colostrum, right? And our goal, from the moment that the sow entered in the farrowing room, must be to reduce stress. And why? Because when less stressed, the farrowing process will be easier and more efficient, and the sow will show less up and down behavior before, during, and also after farrowing, right? So we need to control and try to minimize all the factors that can cause stress to the sow. And in addition to the most clear ones, like the environment, the water, or the feed, including the different feeding schedule, right? It's very important. For example, allocate the gills and sows in the same room. It's also very important the positive interaction with the staff, or enrich the environment by supplying a material for the sow perform a nest building behavior. And then we know that on average the farrowing will last 2 to 4 hours, and then but it can vary, right? Depends on parity, the litter size, the environment, and the interval between piglets can be variable also, but with a maximum around 20-25 minutes, more or less.
What are the key factors to consider during gestation?
Yeah, in my opinion, there is one key factor. That is clearly the body condition of the sow. And we can control this through nutrition and even the great feeding scheme during gestation, right? That's why that is the role of the nutritionist, right? And but I believe that on farm, we should take an individual approach in order to recover the body condition lost during the lactation, and we must do this in the first set or in the first stage of the gestation, right? That's where it all starts. So that is the key point. And in the second stage of gestation, with the cells already in proper condition, we don't want to overfeed, right? This has an extra cost. Can reduce the performance in lactation and in the low feed intake, right? And we can also compromise a good mammary development, right? And finally, in the third stage, we must support higher birth weights and prevent cells from losing weight. Basically, in gestation, we want to ensure the production of an adequate number of piglets with a good body weight, a properly developed mammary gland for the optimal production of milk and colostrum, and achieve a body condition that supports a good performance in lactation. So for me, in my opinion, the key factor is definitely the body condition. That's it. That's what we need to control the most, right?
So what's the ideal or targeted condition of the sow at farrowing?
This question is very much related to the Prevision, right? And I like to measure back fat around farrowing with a Renko on the P2 location because it gives me a very objective result. The targets that we recommend are between 18 and 20 millimeters for yield, because lactation is especially demanding for this category of sows, and between 16 and 18 millimeters, more or less, for sows. In a simple way, fat sows and skinny sows are not good for production, right? And if we want to avoid high steel bonds weights, lactation performance, etc., we must avoid that kind of sows, right? So we need to have balanced sow in terms of body condition, right? We must avoid the fat ones and the skinny ones.
What needs to be watched for at farrowing?
Everything. Everything, but it's very important that we only intervene when needed, not in a systematic way. And a close monitoring of the farrowing process will lead to less but more effective intervention. And it's important to record all events during the farrowing process, including the time frame. We will intervene if signs of perturbation are evident and no piglets have been delivered. This can be a result from a physical blockage of the cervix. Or if the interval between the births of each piglet is too long, and this can result from uterine inertia. But of course, that we also need to consider the parity than the previous stillborn rate or the litter size. Yes, to be more alert. But let me just add, post-farrowing, after the farrowing, there are also many important things to watch from the sow and piglet side to ensure a good start.
How do the different weight piglets need to be handled?
Okay, this question is a very good one, and certainly also controversial, right? We must aim to have uniform litters with a low dispersion of weights. We don't want small piglets, and the uniformity is one of the key points of the breeding program of Ipor, yeah? But yes, sometimes cross-fostering may be necessary to improve, for example, piglets' survival. And in case of small piglets, adequate colostrum intake from own mother prior to fostering is even more essential, right? And during my presentation, we will talk a lot about how to achieve this. I would recommend foster small piglets into the same litter under specific conditions, of course, that I will also talk on the presentation as well. And I usually do about 1 liter of small piglets for each 20 liters born. That means only 5%. And with this, we are giving an extra fair opportunity to the small ones, reducing the competition and improve the teat availability to these ones. And for me, of course, the weight is important, but you also need to assess vitality and ability to reach the teat. It's something that we must consider since the piglet is born, independent of the weight. Okay, sometimes you have piglets with almost 2 kgs that suffer inside a process of hypoxia, severe hypoxia, and then the piglet has no vitality, right? And then we can have a piglet with one kg that really wants to live and really have the vitality and seek for the teat and try to drink so much colostrum as he can. So it's more vital and it's more likely to be weaned than that big one that suffers a severe case of hypoxia, right?
From an economic perspective, what are the dividends of effective farrowing management?
Oh, I believe that there is a huge impact. Honestly, before producers talk about feed conversion or average daily gain, we must think about having less stillborns. My target is less than 6%. Having less pre-weaning mortality, I mean less than 10%. And to enlarge every healthy and uniform litters will lead to better performance on nursery and finish phases, right? And one piglet more that we win, with quality of course, is one pig more that we are able to put on the marker. So if we are able to increase, for example, 0.5 or even 1, the number of your weaned piglets, if you do this with quality, and then you multiply this for the number of sows you have and from the number of cycles per year, this will have a huge impact.
Carlos Martins is the Technical Services Manager at Hyper Hendrix Genetics. It's nearly 1 o'clock on GX and Agriculture, and don't forget GX and Agriculture is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose GX and Agriculture. And yes, it is free. It's now 1 o'clock on GX on Agriculture. Time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Cloudy with winds northwest at 10 to 20, then diminishing. The temperature steady near minus 7. For tonight, partly cloudy, winds south-southwest at 10 to 20, a low of minus 11, but rising to minus 7. For tomorrow, sunny, winds west-northwest at 15 to 30, and a high of minus 3. For Sunday, increasing cloud, winds north-northwest at 10 to 20, the temperature falling to minus 10. Monday, a 60% chance of flurries, a high of minus 9. Tuesday, a 40% chance of flurries and a high of minus 2. In the Paw, it's minus 16 degrees, Swan River minus 11, Dauphin and Roblin minus 7, Brandon, Shoal Lake, Russell minus 6, Regina, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head minus 9, Saskatoon minus 12, Hudson Bay, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington minus 10. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, a west-northwest wind at 13 kilometers an hour. 93% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 8 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 13 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again on Monday for another edition of the program at 12:15. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.